Hi, friends. It's Susan Blackwell from The Spark File, your one-stop shop for creativity where our doors are open. And if you smell something delicious, that's because Laura Camion and I have been cooking up something special, something designed to make a big difference in people's creative lives. Enter The Brave Creative, a free 5-day guided adventure to rediscover the vitality, energy, and possibility in your creative process. Whether you're a writer, a performer, a baker, a candlestick maker, navigating the creative process can be a bear. But never fear, there's power in numbers at The Spark File. So let's link arms and make the trip together. It's May 13th through 17th, 7 p.m. Eastern, less than 1 hour per day. And if you can't join live, don't worry about it. You can watch the replay. Join us by going to thesparkfile.com to register. And hey, if you're not familiar with The Spark File, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Secondly, we work with hundreds of creatives of all different kinds who are ready to take their next big step. We help folks fear less and create more in a community that is so fun and vibrant. And if you have joined us before, know that we are going deep with The Brave Creative. So buckle up, Buttercup. It is going to be an awesome adventure. Go to thesparkfile.com to register, but do it soon because it all starts May 13th. Thesparkfile.com. Register now. The following Makersode featuring Laura Benanti and Venus Fisher was recorded in January of 2021. Since the recording of this podcast, Venus changed her name to Venus.
We hope you enjoy listening to this conversation as much as we enjoyed having it.
The Spark File podcast may contain profanity and other adult content.
Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file.
Spark file.
Could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark file.
Spark file.
I jump into my spark file.
Spark file.
Let's open up the spark file.
Welcome to the Spark File, where we believe that everyone is creative, but smart, creative people know that you don't have to go it alone.
I'm Laura Camion.
And I'm Susan Blackwell. We are coming to you live from the Spark File 2021 New Year Creativity Kickoff.
Y'all, this is our third day of our 3-day virtual retreat, and it has been a bucket of sunshine and a barrel of monkeys, and it's only getting better because we're about to pump up the sunshine and the monkeys with some very, very special guests.
More on that in a second. Listen, if you're joining us for the first time, welcome, welcome. But you may be asking yourself, what exactly is a Spark File? Where do I get one? What do I file in it? These are such good questions. We actually do have answers.
We really do. A Spark File is the place where you consistently collect all your inspirations and fascinations. And if you're anything like us and you're making stuff all the time, you already know that the wellspring of inspiration can run a little dry. We're here to refill it.
We are, we are. We are on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity, things that inspire us to get off of our asses and make things like this podcast.
Or a fully realized 3-dimensional character in the center of a big, splashy Broadway musical.
Or a treasure trove of funny videos that make the internet less of a toxic landfill.
Or a portrayal of a first lady that helped us all get through the last 4 years.
Or albums of music that represent self-expression, creativity, activism, and love.
Or writing that makes us laugh and shines a light for others. On today's Makersode, we're going to talk with someone who truly sparks us.
And that someone is Laura Benanti. Laura,
Laura!
Welcome to The Spark
File.
There she is. Laura, we want to start by asking you, you don't have to give your street address, but will you tell us where you are right now and how you are right now, but for reals?
Okay. I'm in my parents' home, my childhood home where I grew up.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I'm feeling a little melancholy because my sister, who's going to have a baby in March, just left. We all like quarantined for 2 weeks and took a million tests and then had our Christmas on New Year's so that we could, you know, be together.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Mm-hmm. And so she literally just left like an hour ago. So I'm feeling sad. Oh. I'm feeling like my bucket was filled up, but now I just feel like, oh, right. Now it's just like back to life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of your squad peeled off.
And it feels harder now to plan like a quick trip to go see people we love. It's not so, it's not so easy at the moment.
I don't know if I'll see her before she has her baby.
Wow.
Yeah, that's tough.
Well, listen, as we say to everyone in this room, we've probably said it too, we'll take you any way we can get you.
That's right.
We love you so much. We'll take melancholy Benanti.
That's right. We will. And, hey, Laura, you know, we always start every discussion with a SparkVile price of admission, which is really where you share a creative risk that you've taken recently. Could be anything that was not perfection, but it was progress.
Or it could have been perfection.
You're
goddamn Laura Benanti.
It was definitely not perfection. You know, I think for me, like the show on HBO Max, the homeschool musical that we're going to talk about, that for me was like a huge creative risk on multiple levels. I had never executive produced or created something on that level before.
EP, baby.
Wow. Can you tell us how that came about? You know, we from Sunshine Songs to executive producer.
Yeah. So, you know, Friday, March 13th, when we knew that COVID was a thing, but didn't know really what that thing was going to be yet or for how long it would affect us.
Mm-hmm.
And schools were shutting down for like a few weeks. And I was here at my parents' house and my mom, who's a voice teacher, was on the phone and just feeling so disappointed for her students because all of their shows were canceled.
Yeah.
And knowing how important my like school show was to me, it being truly the one time of the year that I didn't feel like a complete loser, where I didn't feel other, but I felt like seen. And like my community was like, that weirdo has talent, huh? Like for one weekend a year, they were like, okay. And then also knowing that this generation self-identifies as anxious, like more than any other generation. They are like the 9/11 babies, these kids. They were born into a world exploding. They have like weekly mass shooting drills. They are like deeply concerned and seemingly only the only ones concerned about climate change. You know, I just feel like there's a lot riding on them. And then we also handed them, they're like digital natives. We were like, here are these phones that will always be attached to your hand. Here is these apps that are going to regulate your self-worth. You're going to constantly be getting notifications as to whether or not people like you. And then so take them, live there, and then we're also going to be mad at you for looking at your phone too.
I
feel like they're like, what? And I feel like to take away that integrative, creative space in which all their hearts are beating in the same room at one time, and they're getting to fully express themselves when they normally do not get to, and then be like, and also you're going to be in your houses and not be able to see each other except in this digital space, which has not always been a safe space for you. I just felt like that is too much.
That's
and I am only one person, but I wanted to sort of meet them where they were, which is to say, hi, this is social media. I know that it's not the same thing as performing for your communities, but if you want to create for me, I want to see you. And so I asked them to send me their videos with the hashtag Sunshine Song, thinking I get like 20 videos, and I got 15,000 videos.
Oh my gosh. Goddamn Laura Benanti. Of course you got 15,000 videos.
Well, but I don't know. I didn't think it was going to be that, honestly. And it like the original post has been viewed like 5 million times or something. It just, it really became, it was kind of the first wave of like, this is how we can be during the pandemic. So, and it's before, like it was kind of the first thing. So all of the morning shows and stuff, they were like all interested in it. So it became this like viral thing.
It's a real message. It was a real message of hope in a moment that really wanted a message.
Yeah. the need to feel seen, like that just strikes such a chord, I think.
Yeah.
You know, for all of us, I'm not a singer. And I saw that post and was like, God, that feels good.
Did you check it? You're not a singer, Laura Camion, but you were like, Laura Benanti, hashtag check me out.
That's right. I might start today.
But it was for the singers and the people who just wanted to enjoy. Like, yeah. That's the thing for me. So it was like, okay, do you want to be seen? Like, let me watch you. And I watched every single video and I commented on every single video.
What?
That's amazing.
I made a commitment to these young people. And so I was like, I told them I was going to watch them and I will. And so I did.
You do so many things. You are incredibly prolific, creatively flowing. You have a family. You have, you know, how did you do that? How did you do that?
Only with help. You know, like I would not be able to do that.
Your daughter, she's a toddler and she's just like, I'm on it. And she's just responding to 15,000.
We watch them together.
We watch them together so much.
She was like, Mommy, they made these for me. I was like, no, I know. And then she would watch them and she'd be like, yellow heart, clap. Like she was telling me.
Oh, I was kidding. You did delegate.
No, I did. I wanted to include her.
Yeah.
I really do try my best to be off my phone around her. And it's something I really work on. And I said, I was like, Ella, what? Cause she's going to be four and she's really, really precocious. And I was like, this is a video that Mommy sent out. And she looked at the video and I was like, and now look at all of these videos that these people are sending for us to watch them and to love them.
Oh.
And she was like, they are sending them to me.
I was like, get to work.
They are. And so, you know, I watched them mostly when she was asleep. My husband and I would watch them together. But when she watched with me, she would tell me which emojis. Her favorite, she was like, yellow heart, two yellow hearts. Like, she was very, very serious about it. It was amazing. And then if it was like, you know, just beyond spectacular, she'd be like, say something.
Oh, my God.
Say something.
Yeah. Oh my
Mama,
God.
You've got to say something.
You got to say
Laura,
something.
Laura, what? So then I just want to, how did you make the leap then to this needs to be something bigger? This needs to be a show and I need to produce it.
So that didn't come from me, frankly. So my next natural progression there was I began to be concerned about our most severely isolated population, which is senior citizens and children in children's hospitals. Mm-hmm. Who were so isolated from their parents. They couldn't even see their parents.
Oh, and your brain. I love the way your brain works.
But I just was like, because I'm very, very close to my mamu, who is 96 years old, my mom's mom. My dad's mom died of COVID. And and then, thank you. And then my husband's grandma died of COVID. And and I was like, my grandmother is alone. Right now, she's alone. Yeah. 96. She's like was born in the wilds of Montana. Like had an outhouse. Like used a bow and arrow to kill deer. Like this.
She's a badass. But she's older and she's alone.
She's 96 and she literally said to me, "I cannot die like this." She's like, I am not meant to die like this. You know, and I kept thinking of all of those people. All of these wonderful people from this generation, frankly, and I could do a whole podcast on this. I hate how we treat our seniors
Ditto.
I really hate it. I think it's abhorrent and I get it. Like we are a youth loving society, but the fact that we just sort of send them away so that we don't have to face our own mortality makes me really gross out. So long story long at this point, I apologize. I was like, you know what? I got to get to them. So my friend Kate Dieter Meriday, she's a community activist in Raleigh. She and I were talking and I was like power walking and like sobbing, which was like most of my pandemic experience. And I was like, what can we do? I was like, we have to help them. And so she reached out to a local senior like online community in Raleigh called K4 Connect. And then we started what we started calling Sunshine Concerts. And through our asking people to submit their videos for Sunshine Concerts, a gentleman reached out to me from a place called Seniorly, and they have hundreds of thousands of senior living communities. So we teamed up with them to create these like free online shows that were easy, like for the senior citizens to see, because someone was doing it for them, like going in and hooking it up. And then I just personally called hundreds of children's hospitals and said, hi, I'm Laura Benanti. Do you have any need for this kind of programming right now? And they were like, yeah. So I got connected with so many music therapists, one of whom has become one of my really dear friends. Her name is Stephanie Epstein. She works at a hospital in Miami, and she does some really incredible work. And through that, we were able to do, I think it was like nine. We did them every other week, and we did nine of them. And it was like, and we did it with Heredia Vision, which is this incredible women-led production company who's doing all of this online stuff. So that was my next natural progression, was to take it to like a charitable place. Yeah. And then I was kind of like, all right, this is, we're done, you know? And then World of Wonder, which is the production company that does RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes, Drag Race.
They were like, what do you, like, you should do something with this. And I was like, I don't want to monetize these kids. Like, I just don't want it to be something, I don't want it to turn into something weird. I don't want it to be like the Masked Singer all of a sudden, you know what I mean?
Not that there's
anything wrong with the Masked Singer, but like,
You're like, this is pure, and let's keep it pure.
And they were like, no, we think we can actually do something great. So we met with HBO Max, like obviously all virtually. And initially it was going to be a scripted musical. And then when George Floyd was murdered, I was like, nope. I was like, we cannot have a group of middle-aged white people telling a very diverse group of young people what to say. Like, I can't do that.
What to sing and
dance. HBO Max pivoted in a way that cost them a tremendous amount of money. I cannot say enough good things about HBO Max, like from the production.
And
I went to them and I said, I don't think we should do this. And they were like, okay. I was like, I really think we should make this a documentary. And I think we should choose young people from like a diverse group of young people from all over the country to say their own things, pick their own songs, and we can send them equipment and they can create their own musical performances, and we will just give them the platform. And they were like, okay.
Wow. There's that EP brain working, the EP brain. But the thing that knocks me out about it is the things that they made, the things that these young people made had production value and real creative vision.
That's right.
We'll talk a bit more about that, but that's amazing that they had that much creative agency.
They were, I mean, I really thought they were going to be like, we will see you, you know, you like give us the musical, and they didn't. They were like, okay, this is going to cost us a lot of money, because they had to basically, we had everybody hired, and so they had to pay everyone.
Be
like, goodbye. Like, thank you for your time and your work, but we're not going to be doing this. And then bring on an entirely new team, and then, like, a new director, a new showrunner, because documentary
is different,
obviously so different. And I'm really, really proud of what it is. It, to me, is more in the spirit of Sunshine Song, because it's these kids sharing and creating. And really what it, I just wanted to like pass the mic to them rather than be like, here's a middle-aged white lady. Like, I just didn't want that.
Yeah. And they go deep. Like, they are profound and thoughtful creations, and conversations with them on that show is really moved.
Yeah. I'm glad that you feel that way. Thank you.
Laura Benanti, you are officially admitted into the Spark Pile. That is a hell of a price of admission.
That's a hell of a price.
Jumping back for the noobs out there who don't know you, how do you identify creatively? If somebody walks up to you and says, what do you do? How do you answer? Because it's a lot.
If someone asks me what I do, I usually say I'm a mom, because to me, there's nothing more embarrassing than someone being like, than saying I'm an actor, and then going, oh, anything I'd know? And I'm like, oh, well, maybe. And then it's like a 25-minute conversation of me listing all my credits, and I'm going, nope, not that. And then and then it's just soul crushing, where it's not good. So, I mean, I like at the doctor, when they're like, what do you do? I write actor. Mm-hmm. Because that's how I first identified, you know, as an 18-year-old person. But I'm an actor and a singer and a creator and a producer.
Yeah.
You know, I think that especially over the past 10 years and even more so in the past, frankly, since my daughter was born, I am doing my best to create my own content.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And some of that is also in writing, right? You write books for adults, you write books for children, you do make a ton of content, you're an activist. Like, we've been so curious to ask you kind of when you knew, when did you first know that you were creative? And then was there a point at which you allowed it to expand to be a bigger container?
I mean, as a child, I was always like deeply creative. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, being a little girl who's really creative and also has a very clear vision, I got called bossy a lot. You know, she's so bossy.
Yep.
Meanwhile, like the boys who were doing that, they were like, look at him, go get her, you know?
Such leadership.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, such leadership. And I remember being like, that's some bullshit as like a 5-year-old. And fortunately, I have great parents, my mom and my dad, my stepdad who raised me. They were very like, do your thing. Like, you are not allowed to be a professional actor, because I kept begging them to be a real act, like a real actor. And they were like, no. And so what it meant was I was like, you know, corralling all the kids in my neighborhood and like casting them against their will. And a lot of time being lonely, which I think is great, because that is a gift that this generation does not have. They never have to be lonely because their phones are there.
That is so true.
It seems like you've given this some thought, maybe because of the work that you have done with people of a certain age. Your insight and the way you articulate it about that relationship to technology and the pros and the cons of it is, it's great. It's really great. You've been paying attention.
Well, you know what it is? I feel like technology was the thing that enabled me to say, hey, I'm funny. Like, I feel like Twitter was the place where everyone went, she's really funny. Yeah. And all of a sudden, all these comedians were following me. And I wasn't just like musical theater Laura Benanti. Mm-hmm. You know, not that there's anything wrong with that. That's how I would be happy to be for the rest of my life. But all of a sudden, it was like real comedians were following me and directors. And you know, I started like writing jokes.
Yeah.
That people were really liking. And I had a platform. I didn't have to like go beg some Hollywood producer to like give me a platform to write my jokes. And they weren't taking me seriously because I'm just an actor, you know? So the technology aspect of that was super, super positive. So I have that side of it. But then I also think it can be highly, highly addictive. And even more so now, I think it's the fight or flight response that it creates in people, in our nervous system, I think is actually highly detrimental. So something I've been researching a lot about, something I think about for my own self.
It's just to your point about technology, a few things. If you're listening, listeners, the spark that Laura Benanti just shared about, I don't always call her by her full God-given name. It's just because there's so many Laura's present. But the spark that Laura Benanti just shared about, it's a little bit like writing a haiku every day, crafting a joke and posting it every day and seeing, you know, like it's workshopping it. What plays less well. Yeah. That is a very low barrier to entry way to engage with your creativity on a regular basis.
Also is setting aside the phone for a while, because like, I'm so struck by what you mentioned, you know, for a generation of people who have grown up with it in their palms, they never have to have that moment where you do feel lonely, where you feel like there's nothing for me to do now except maybe look inward and sit with myself and get to know my own thoughts for a while, because there's a way out of it always. You're like, just pick up the phone, and I feel uncomfortable, I'll pick up the phone. There's got to be something going on here that can distract me. And I yeah. think it is so essential for people like yourself to be thinking about how we understand and relate to a generation that has grown up in an entirely different world.
I think also there's something to be said for keeping your own counsel. And so now we live in a society where you're like, just ate a muffin, and you're like, had a muffin, you know, like where everything yes. also feels so like, yes. I don't care, you know, like that's not important. Mm-hmm. And yet it makes you feel important. And then it yeah. makes you feel so unimportant if you don't see the heart start to pile up about your muffin consumption. You know? So it's like, so you know, true. I had a thought. Like as growing up, I remember having a thought and then writing it in my journal mm-hmm. and having it for myself. And I look back now and I read those journals and I'm like, thank God that wasn't out in the world. I was mortified.
Oh God, you know? I'm so with you.
The stakes of that are so high to me that now you have yeah. an entire generation of kids who are like, I think this now, I'll probably think this forever.
Right. Forever. This is my journal and I'll publish it
forever. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Do you still keep a journal? Just out of curiosity, do you still
have time?
I don't. And I always say I'm going to because I feel better when I do.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a lot better when I do. I like before when I wake up and before I go to sleep, I make a gratitude list like in my head.
Yeah.
But I always feel better when I'm actually like handwriting. Yep. I think there is something to be said too for like the slow labor of it.
Yes.
And it also slows your thoughts.
Yep.
You know, and you're not staring at a screen. I just feel like the minute I'm staring at a screen, my brain does a different thing.
Mm. Yeah. Agreed.
You know, Banoons, listening to you talk and watching you through the lens, even when we don't actually, we're not in the same physical space together, but watching you over the years and watching you evolve into this fully realized originating artist who, I mean, with each passing day, week, and month continue, I just feel like your creative flow is so flowing, and I don't hear a lot of resistance or even fear in what when you talk about like having an idea and then being like, here's how I'm going to start manifesting the idea. Do you have resistance? Do you have fear?
I don't have resistance to exploring an idea.
Mm-hmm.
If anything,
are you ever like the resistance of like, oh, that sounds like a lot of fucking work? Even that.
I you know what's interesting? So before I had my daughter, yeah, the answer to that was yes.
Mm.
Because I think I was taking for granted what it was like to be just my own person. And then after I had my daughter, I had such severe postpartum depression and anxiety for like the first 6 months of her life that I was a shell of a person, truly, and couldn't enjoy anything.
Mm.
And then when I started enjoying things again, and when I was able to go to work again on things that I loved, I appreciated it so much.
Mm-hmm.
I had such a newfound appreciation for this gift that I have been given of getting to do what I love for a living. Because there are so many people on this earth who don't get to live a creative life. Yeah. And I am just lucky that I do. Because I will tell you, I have heard people sing on the subway who sing 10 times better than I do. And there is no reason why they are in the subway and I am on Broadway. It is simply luck. And so for me, having the gratitude of that helps me to say, even when I feel resistance, like, you are so lucky that you can even think that you can do this. So do it, you mm-hmm. know? And also, I think for me, like having the support of my husband, who is such a wonderful man, who is not in this business at all, you yes. know, but who is such mm-hmm. a supporter of me.
Yeah.
And frankly, spending every minute of my day in service to my child, then when I do have moments to break away and do something for my own self, it feels like a gift.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like, oh, I got to do this. I'm like, oh, I get to do this. But I do have fear.
How did your fear show up?
The fear is, what will people say? Mm. You know, and sometimes I get angry. Sometimes I have an anger. Like I put out an album this year of songs that I'm super proud of. And I find myself like getting really angry with like the record label, where I'm like, they're not working hard enough. Like I work so hard. Why aren't they working hard enough?
Yeah.
So I feel like I feel like a resentment and an anger there, but like I can't make people do things. And I also can't make the consumer like want to listen to my music. You know, if that's not the popular music, if that's not like what people are wanting to hear, like I can't change that. And I'm telling you, this is so true. I'm not saying this because this is the podcast I am on. I say to myself multiple times a day, I'd rather be 9 people's favorite thing than 100 people's 9th favorite thing. Every single day, multiple times a day.
It's because empowering.
It is hugely empowering because when I do see somebody, when I meet them in person, when that was a thing, they are so kind and loving and deeply invested in our conversation. They're not just like, hey, could I get a selfie? Could I get a, you know, it's not that. It's like a person who is like, thank you for, you know, like they're just a thoughtful individual.
One of your 9 people.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And so that, so like the fear and sometimes the like vicious anger I feel of like, fuck Kim Kardashian and like those people who are famous just for like, for what?
Yeah.
Being, you know, famous.
I get so mad. Like, I don't even want to be famous. I just want to like be able to spread what I think is like really great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so who gives a shit what the Kardashians are doing? Who cares? And the unfortunate answer is millions upon millions of people care.
Mm-hmm. They want to know if they're keeping up or not.
They want to know. You know? And thousands and thousands of people love my music.
That's right.
And so instead of comparing, which is, you know, obviously the fastest way to depression, like
comparison vampire, baby.
Yeah, it's a huge vampire.
Huge.
You know? And instead of spending the time in that suck, I really get into gratitude. For me, gratitude is the antidote to fear and anger.
Gratitude, like you were just saying, Laura Benanti, the privilege of getting to, you make something, people respond to it or don't respond to it as they will. But I don't see that stopping you from continuing your making. Mm-hmm. Like you remain flowing. Speaking of things that you have made, we're going to bring it back to Homeschool Musical, now available for your enjoyment on HBO Max. And like Cams was saying a little bit earlier, like the depth of it.
The depth of all of their thoughts, their experiences. Really
bringing us hope for our humanity and for our future. And speaking of hope for the future, would you please welcome our guest and one of the stars of Homeschool Musical, Fisher Barnett.
Yes! Yes!
Fisher!
Thank you so much for being here. We're so happy to see your face. And we're so happy to see your face on HBO Max.
It's crazy.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Okay, great.
Before we get too far into it, you also have a price of admission. Can you tell us a creative risk that you've taken recently?
So I kind of got started on it from Laura kind of catching on to her self-creation bug. And so I've been writing a lot. It started with, I had a class assignment to create a sound project, and that was it. Just taking sound and sort of creating this narrative with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not excited for it. I hold myself back a lot from exploring different mediums, but I kind of got stuck on, I was rewatching all of the Sondheim shows,
mm-hmm.
and I was really obsessed with this concept of like when someone is in an abusive situation for so long, how do they know what's love and what's abuse?
Nice.
And so I started taking these Sondheim songs and really listening to the lyrics, like, oh, not a day goes by. Mm. You know, it's this beautiful longing for love. But it can also be this really melancholy feel of just remembering someone over and over again for every day. And then that was really fun, and I loved that. And so now I've been writing, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it'll be.
You've opened a wellspring.
You don't have to know yet.
That's right.
Yeah, and so I've been talking to a lot of my friends, especially in the trans community, talking about when you've felt most loved and when you haven't. So it's a bunch of these different narratives together, and it's called Sculpting Aphrodite, because a goddess can't be made of all the best. It has to be made of everything. So.
I think it's safe to say you are officially admitted to the Spark file. You've gone above and beyond on your application. Amazing. Okay. I cannot wait to hear and see what you make of that.
Fisher, will you say again that prompt? It's when have you felt the most loved and when have you not? Is that the spark? Is that the prompt?
Yeah.
In there?
So I started with my own two stories. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, and it was different. So I talked about the feeling of being seen but not being looked at, as opposed to being looked at and not being seen. So I had these two pieces of, you know, the first one was about me madly in love with a man who I felt saw who I was and saw me but would never look at me. Mm. And then the polarity of that to someone who would only look at me and would never see me. And so sort of when you felt that love and that presence versus when you didn't.
I just want to let you know those prompts I'm taking and I'm putting them in our Spark file, because as teachers and as makers ourselves, we will be working from those prompts. We'll credit you and we'll send you one shiny quarter. Fisher, like Laura Benanti and like Laura Camion and many other Lauras who are listening to this right now,
yes,
you have created, you have made, you have processed so much during this pandemic time. When you look back on this time, what will be some highlights for you?
It's so strange to talk about like the highlights of this, because it doesn't feel like there should be, you know.
And yet
yes, they're here. And I think that in itself is something magical. But I don't know if there are specific moments, but I think, you know, looking at where I am now versus where I was at the beginning of quarantine, that's something that brings me so much joy, because I think, you know, for those who don't know or haven't seen the documentary, I began transitioning over quarantine, and it was kind of, it came out of being forced to self-reflect for so long alone in a deeper way than I felt before. Because I was someone who did not rely on technology to be with people. I was kind of like Laura in the way of, you know, I needed to be with community to feel seen. And so when I was alone on Instagram and Twitter and all of these things, I just had such a deep hatred for myself. And I could never figure out what it was. And, you know, I took the social media breaks, I did all of that, and I just realized it was that I was holding myself back again and that I wasn't, you know, living the life that I wanted to.
Yeah.
And so now looking at that person who is so trapped and depressed, and, you know, even now I'm going through another spurt of seasonal depression and having a lot of really hard emotional ups and downs, but I'm still very content with who I am as a person. That was not the case a couple months ago.
It's amazing to have this moment captured in the documentary as well. Fisher and I are both from Dayton, Ohio. So many feelings were felt. Mm-hmm. Just my pride for Laura Benanti and for all of that making and all of that bringing people together under such bizarre circumstances. Mm-hmm. And my hometown love and my adoration of you, Fisher. One of the things that really moved me in the piece is your parents' love and acceptance and y'all's love for each other. And I thought it's one of the reasons why I feel
like from the first time I met you, Fisher, I was just like, that's a bright light. That is a bright, special light. And I, when you talked about your family, I was like, that's a foundational piece. Mm-hmm. That your light is so flowing because there's so much love and acceptance there.
My parents really took care of me in ways that I didn't think they saw paying off. My mom prepared the entire family when I was probably around 3 years old that I might be gay. That they need to start dealing with that now so that by the time I've dealt with it, they're on board. Which at the time, I hated her for. I hated it because I was like, how could you know something about me that I didn't even know about myself? Mm-hmm. And then to go on and tell people, you know? Mm-hmm. But now looking back, what a gift that was to actually see something in me that I didn't see in myself and be so okay with it that she was willing to cut other people out if they weren't.
Yeah, to advocate for you, you know, yeah. Ahead of time to say everyone get on board.
There was never that pressure to be something I wasn't.
Amazing.
And, you know, they tried in the beginning when all I wanted for Christmas was the Princess and the Pauper Barbie. They would give me the G.I. Joes and the, you know, racetracks, but then the very last gift would always be the Barbie. And so they always took care of me and they always loved me. And
that's amazing.
That's amazing. Oh, so my God.
Laura, you said you had, what, 15,000 entries for Sunshine Songs. How did you find Fisher? And I mean, we've already said, like, think you meet Fisher and you know there's a glowing light around her, but how did you connect up and determine that Fisher was right for the show?
Fisher and I actually met at the
Performing Arts Project.
Arts Project.
Yeah.
So I was doing like a class. Everybody was asking questions at the end. And then they were all, you know, sort of related to theater. And, mm-hmm. and then Fisher asked me what my love language was.
Ooh.
And I was
Fisher
like,
goes deep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was really like taken with her.
Mm-hmm.
And that she wanted to like go beyond the business stuff, you know, that mm-hmm. she asked a question about me as a person, yeah. as a human.
Yeah.
That was the first time we met. And then she submitted an audition for Homeschool Musical when it was a musical.
Mm. Oh, okay. In its first like, iteration. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my gosh, I know her.
Mm-hmm.
And she can turn it out.
Yeah. And I actually didn't know. Like I didn't see Fisher perform. Wait, did I see you perform that day?
Oh, she can.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here to test.
No, you didn't perform that day. So I didn't see her perform until her audition. And I was like, oh my gosh, I know her. And the casting directors were like, really? And I was like, no, really? Like we've talked and we know each other.
She knows my love language.
Yeah, she knows my love language.
What is your love language?
You know what? I can't even remember. I don't know. It changes all the time.
Fisher, what is Laura's love language?
I think at the time, maybe it was touch.
It was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like reaffirming, even if it's like yeah. a, hey, buddy, like, I just like that. Nice. Like my daughter, I love cuddling her and she's like, ugh. Like she just doesn't want to cuddle me. So yeah, I was really taken with her. And then, you know, when it was a musical, one of the things that bothered me about the musical itself is while it was very inclusive in some ways, it wasn't inclusive in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, So then when we pivoted to the documentary, myself and the casting directors and the other producers were like, you know, Fisher has such a, this could be such a gift to people yeah. who need to hear her story
yeah.
beyond her being such an incredible talent. So beyond mm-hmm. her video being really entertaining mm-hmm. and lovely, you know, I think that it speaks to a self-acceptance and a self-love and mm-hmm. a self-awareness that mm-hmm. anyone could, you know, learn from.
I wrote down hope, like as I was watching and listening, that was around the time I wrote down hope. I just felt such a hope for the future.
Yeah.
Listening. Yeah.
That's how I feel about this, these young people, you know, I do get a sense of like, okay, it's going to be okay, but I don't want them to feel like it's all on their shoulders. You know, I wanted them to know that they would have someone walking by their side.
Yeah.
You know, cause I don't want to speak for them, but I felt a sense of loneliness in watching how much we've handed them, how much responsibility and how much burden, frankly, like they have a lot to fix and I think they're up for it. But I don't want to just be like, they give me so much hope. Good luck. You know, like I want to like help them.
Yeah.
Whether that's walking next to them or walking in front of them and just, you know,
clearing the way.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. We have a question from one of the participants. As you know, we are in the third day of our 3-day virtual creativity retreat. This is an amazing group of people that who are listening to you right now, all different kinds of artists making all different kinds of things. And this question is from Gerald Brenner. I'm so moved by what you've created and are sharing. Is it possible to put into words how the experience of making the documentary has changed you? And we'll start with Laura Benanti.
Good question, Gerald.
This is heavy hitting journalism right here, Gerald. Mm-hmm.
It has changed me in that I feel like it's softened me in some ways and it's made me more collaborative in some ways because to do it took a tremendous amount of people working together in virtually. Which is, it's really hard to get a workflow going, a creative workflow, when you're not all in the same space. So it required, I think, more patience of an impatient person. And I just felt like a general softening of my heart in interacting with the kids and their families and friends so much. But it also changed me in that I learned to become a more direct advocate for myself and what I create because not everyone is good at their job. And so, and to just say that's not personal, but I'm not going to work this hard for you to not work hard.
Amen.
Benanti, you have just gotten clearer and clearer and clearer with each passing year. Your clarity is so inspiring. And I just want to take a shot glass of it and drink it. And next time somebody's I'm going to be
around
like you,
for everyone.
You're not a bad human, but you're not doing your job well right now. And I'm just going to be like, bam.
And I am not working this hard.
I'm not working this hard.
Not to be. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a way to do it too. Like, you know, I don't want to
put
my own project in the face, you know? So for me, it's been like, how do I send these very direct emails? Cause that's mostly the mode of communication. And what I used to do is be like, hey, sorry to bother you. XOXO. Mm-hmm. Like everything was an apology. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I'm like, hey, we were supposed to get, you know, ABCD 2 days ago. We still don't have it. Can you please tell me one bullet point? When I can expect it.
Yeah.
To how can we prevent this from happening again?
Yes.
You know, this has taken a tremendous amount of work on behalf of a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And it's my job to protect them.
Yep.
So please let me know the best way we can move forward.
It's so clear, you know, asking for
it's
what
clear,
you
but
need.
It's kind, right?
Yes. Yes.
I'm looking at some faces in the virtual gallery and people are like, get in.
Yes.
Fuck. Like that is hot news you can use.
But then I will tell you, I'm not that Buddhist about it because then I will text on the thread with the kids and I'm like, motherfuckers gotta look up.
Yeah. It's really fun to hear how you're describing it.
So nice. Yeah. Then with them, I'm like, hey, did you guys get an email from da 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 da? No? Okay, hold on.
So I'm on it.
Of, like, being really angry.
But that's what you're talking. That's what you were talking about earlier. Sometimes your job is to run interference and be like, I am going to clear the way so that you all have a job that you're already doing, and we don't want to make it more challenging. Oh, and save the world. Mm-hmm. It's a way that you can just use your badassery and your clarity to make way for yourself, but also for other artists.
And like these people are putting themselves out there.
Yeah.
Like, they don't need to be texting me being like, hey, what are we supposed to be doing today? Like, no.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, anyway.
Mm-hmm. Protect that creative
that's
baby.
Hot. Ooh, yes. I got all riled up, Benanti. And Fisher, how about you? How do you feel like this experience has impacted you?
I mean, I've gotten so much out of it. I'm so thankful for Laura, you know, truly to have, I think of her as like a mentor and a friend, and to have her be so honest and so upfront with us in every way. I'm so thankful for that. But I also think overall it's just been incredibly validating. And I've told Laura this 100 times, but I originally submitted my audition as like a last ditch effort to see if there was a chance for me having a career as a trans woman. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't get it, I was like, maybe it's, I was so ready to stay in the closet for the rest of my life. And then she saw it and saw something in me and gave me a platform and gave me resources and love. And it was all of those things that made me feel so like, we can do something with this.
You know, Fisher, when you say that, full disclosure, Laura Camion, as you know, is in this room. Hunter Bell is also a participant in the workshop this weekend. So Hunter Bell is looking at your faces right now. Laura, Benanti, you were talking about nine people's favorite thing from title of show earlier. Fisher, what you're describing is what I call, this is the worst fucking metaphor in the world, but I call it the catcher's mitt of safety. And there, people like Hunter Bell, people like Laura Camion, and even Laura Benanti, like they make up the fingers of my catcher's mitt of safety. I know that I can go into them and like share things half baked and do my best, but it might not be the best I ever do. Like I can be scared. I can be, I could take risks with these people and know that. And I'm so stoked that Fisher, you landed in Laura Benanti's catcher's mitt of safety.
Yeah.
That's such a critical
moment. I cannot speak highly enough about her because it's exactly what you're talking about. You know, I felt like on the days where I had to go and work and shoot my video, I would be so focused on a million things. And she would just send me a text like, hey, you can see your belly button in this lighting. Maybe you want to put on like a pair of Spanx or something, you know, and just have my back.
She's a pro. She knows what
she's a pro.
And she always just sent at the beginning, like, I would only tell this to you if I thought, you know, you'd want to hear it. And like,
I wouldn't want someone, if you could see my belly button, I want someone to tell me.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep. Fisher, I just want to say what you made, the way that it's shot, the way that it's art directed, the way that it looks is a thing of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
So we love it. Keep going in terms of you as a whole artist and maker, not just a performer. We love it. Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was not alone. I did have a ton of other people helping me with that. So as much as I want to take credit for all of it.
Well done. Well done.
But as we say on the Spark File, like smart creative people know that you don't have to go it alone, that you can have a vision and then bring the people around you that you want on the ride, and you all can link arms and make something beautiful as the two of you have done.
Have done. JP Karliak has asked this question. Question to both of you. As we come out of this and rebuild our arts communities, what changes do you want to see or make in theater to create more accessibility and inclusivity?
I want Fisher to go first because I went first last time.
Okay, great. Fisher, you're up.
I am so obsessed with taking shows that are looked at as very exclusive in a way, and putting them through a trans lens, and just seeing how delicious and beautiful that story is.
Yeah.
And I always talk about the same one because I'm obsessed with it, and Laura's probably tired of hearing it.
What is it?
But I think Funny Girl is about a trans woman. Because
I thought you were going to say Sweeney Todd, but Funny Girl. Okay.
But if you look at it, like, there's so much text that can be interpreted as misogynistic, like, you are woman, I am man. But I think if you look at it as you are just a woman and I am just a man and that's all this is, and just seeing a woman who is told her whole life that she's ugly and that she doesn't look like the other girls and all of these things, and she's just as talented. And I think you can do that with so many other shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping to see a lot more representation in true, like, dynamic ways, because I think we have there's no selection at all for trans people in theater right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping it gets a little more mainstream.
It's great.
Thinking maybe you could lead the charge. Just saying.
I really want you to do that. When you go back to school, I really, really want you to do that.
Well, and that's what Laura told me. She was like, you need to start a theater company.
Yeah.
And that's what started me down this road of writing and all of that.
Yes. I do love that idea, but I also love what Laura Benanti just said. And I want her, as an interim step, before you get the company started, if you might be able to collaborate with either decision makers at your school theater, or when I was in school, we mounted our own productions. If I had my eyes on something, this is the originator in me. I had my eyes on something and I was like, the school isn't going to produce it in 1 million years. I would rehearse my main stage show. And then I got in trouble for it too. And I was like, you have to go fuck yourself, because I contain multitudes and I can do this Arthur Miller play. And then I'm going to stay up 2 hours later and I'm going to put up this thing that I want to do.
Yes.
So I'm sure that might be an option as well. Just a little
free. And I mean, I'm so lucky. I go to UNCSA in North Carolina and there's already a wonderful trans community there. And they're already, you know, pioneering work that I've been a part of. And so seeing changes and more representation in every step of theater in the creative, in like creative settings like schools and behind the camera and backstage, I think that's
changes
that I'm really looking forward to.
That's great. How about you, Benanti?
So cool, Benanti.
Mm-hmm. You can run, but you can't hide, Benanti. What you got?
You know, I think that it's part of a deeper conversation, because like, Broadway is theater for a rich audience. At this point, you have to be able to afford a tremendous amount of money to see a show. But people who have that kind of money want to see a certain kind of theater usually.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where it becomes really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where we've seen in a lot of ways some really great creative, especially musical theater, stall, because they are making theater for a very specific group of people. I think less so sometimes in straight plays, because then you get like the Bryan Cranstons of the world and the, you know, movie stars of the world to come in and they know they're going to make their money back in the 4 weeks that all the New Yorkers come and see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can afford to be a little bit more creative. But I do think that there is a fear of not making money.
Yeah.
And so you get to see, frankly, faces that look like mine. You know, I think, you know, I've perpetuated a certain, you know, homogeny in a Broadway culture. And that's not my fault, but it's something I've been a party to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would love to be part of making theater look more like the world, the real world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my hope is that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about how we're going to be a more inclusive community, how, you know, theater is going to be more reflective of diversity. And I hope that that's true. I don't mean to be sounding like a downer. I'm just interested to know how that's going to be true.
Yeah. And I think we all have to show, put our money where our mouth is, right? Put our money where our beliefs are. So even if it's not on Broadway, if other shows and acts of creativity are being done and we support them, there will be people who look over and say, hey, there's money being made over there. You know, I want in on that. Mm-hmm. I think that's all part of that. You know, really trying to change the way we think about how we support things. And it can start with our dollars, literally.
And I think too, frankly, you know, if you, like for me, to make a commitment to say, you know, instead of just saying like, hey, why is everybody white? Mm-hmm. And being told like, oh, well, we had to blah, 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 and then being like, okay, which is what I've done in the past, being like, oh, well, then I can't do it then.
Yeah.
Which is something that in the past, I think I was too afraid to do, where I was like, just proud enough of myself for having asked, which is some bullshit, you know, to just be like, well, I tried. Like, no, you didn't.
But Nancy, if you can go in and tell HBO Max that you don't want them to do the musical that they've spent a ton of money on and they're all prepared to do, then you can say, this isn't happening unless I see these changes.
I can try, you know, whether or not people listen to me is another, sure. you know, another thing.
No, you throw that Benanti weight around. Do it. No,
do it.
Some places it has more. But I will say HBO Max has been incredible to work with. Not only did they pivot in these incredible ways and put on this show, but they donated $10,000 to this college fund, which their entire mission statement is diversity in our college level theater training program.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're really remarkable. So I can't say enough good things about
so
them.
So good to hear. That's
and
really
you,
good to hear.
You are two of our favorites. And before we send you off, I just want to share, we all introduced ourselves in this creativity retreat via haiku. And one of the participants, Andrew, has been kind enough to write haiku for you. So Laura, here's yours. Loving human mom, actor on her intake form, help her find her shoe. And Fisher, this is your haiku from Andrew. Love language expert, documentary starshine, safe in Laura's mitt. Those are your haiku. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And thank you so much to our guests, Laura Benanti and Fisher Barnett. Thank you so much, friends. This episode of The Spark File was made on Muncie, Lenape, and Seminole land, and we hope it put another bunch of sparks in your file. Listen to us. If there is a spark you'd like us to explore, or you've taken a spark and you fanned it into a creative flame and you'd like to share that, we hope you'll email us at thesparkfile@gmail.com or submit it through our website, thesparkfile.com.
We will even happily take your feedback, but you know the price of admission. First, you have to share a creative risk that you've taken recently.
And be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, 5-star review it. If you liked this podcast, we hope you'll share it with people you love. And if you didn't like it, I don't know. What do you say to your critics? Benanti?
I don't say much.
Oh, the shade.
Done.
The shade.
Done.
And Fisher, what do you say to your critics?
Well, Laura has taught me not to read the comments, so I agree with her.
Don't read the comments.
Don't read the comments.
There you go.
If something tickles your fancy and gets your creative juices flowing, we're writing you a forever permission slip to make that thing that's been knocking at your door. It's your turn to take a spark and fan it into a flame.
You gotta take it and make it.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark file. Could be something that I wanna make or how I wanna be. I pump it in my spark file. I jump into my spark file. Let's open up the spark file.
Hi, friends. It's Susan Blackwell from The Spark File, your one-stop shop for creativity where our doors are open. And if you smell something delicious, that's because Laura Camion and I have been cooking up something special, something designed to make a big difference in people's creative lives. Enter The Brave Creative, a free 5-day guided adventure to rediscover the vitality, energy, and possibility in your creative process. Whether you're a writer, a performer, a baker, a candlestick maker, navigating the creative process can be a bear. But never fear, there's power in numbers at The Spark File. So let's link arms and make the trip together. It's May 13th through 17th, 7 p.m. Eastern, less than 1 hour per day. And if you can't join live, don't worry about it. You can watch the replay. Join us by going to thesparkfile.com to register. And hey, if you're not familiar with The Spark File, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Secondly, we work with hundreds of creatives of all different kinds who are ready to take their next big step. We help folks fear less and create more in a community that is so fun and vibrant. And if you have joined us before, know that we are going deep with The Brave Creative. So buckle up, Buttercup. It is going to be an awesome adventure. Go to thesparkfile.com to register, but do it soon because it all starts May 13th. Thesparkfile.com. Register now.